On the 250th anniversary of the birth of Ludwig van Beethoven, I, Patricia Salomone, present Beethoven, His Life and Times, with the assistance of my friend Gerald Fenech for the musical content. I feel I have to tie Beethoven's composition of Fidelio to his love life, because as I read various biographies, I realize that the man Ludwig seemed to aspire to married life, and frequently, when he flirted with a woman, he did not waste time in proposing marriage. That he was let down and disappointed may be attributed, up to a certain degree, to his not really wanting to tie himself down, as throughout his life he gave his priority to what he called his divine art. When the eclectic librettist and impresario Emanuel Schikaneder nominated Beethoven as composer of his theatre, the Theater an der Wien, with contract, Beethoven was to write an opera setting the music to a new libretto by Schikaneder himself, entitled Vesta's Führer. However, this libretto was not to Beethoven's liking. He spent a while composing music for it, and then abandoned it when the libretto for Fidelio came to his attention. Fidelio dates back to about 1803. The libretto was based on a play by Nicolas Bouilly, Léonore ou l'amour conjugal. Beethoven was attracted to this story for several reasons. Firstly, Léonore told of the love, the sacrifice and dedication of a wife for her husband. But also, and importantly, it was a rescue opera. It exemplified freedom from a yoke, and hence freedom of mankind and rebellion to oppression. It anticipated the romantic idea of nationhood. In brief, Léonore is a young woman disguised as a man for the purpose of finding her husband, who was captured and imprisoned because of his political affiliations. Leonore was, in fact, the first title for the opera, which was to go through various phases before it finally attained the form that we know of Beethoven's one and only opera, Fidelio. Thank you. first, the opera hit against the obstacle of censorship, as it disturbed the authorities with its connotations of rebellion against the established order. But once it could be seen as being less subversive to the Habsburg Empire and instead supportive of pan-German alliance against the threat of the advancing French armies, it was given the go-ahead. This was a highly prolific period in the life of our composer. Beethoven was involved with rehearsals for his Eroica. He composed the piano sonata, which has gone down to history as the Appassionata. And something special happened in his personal life. He fell in love once more. The young woman this time was 16-year-old Countess Giulietta, Giulia, Guicciardi, whose father was a senior Austrian civil servant, while her mother was related to the aristocratic Brunswick family. The Guicciardi family was not well off and did not belong to the high aristocratic strata in which Beethoven was now used to moving, and to which, notwithstanding his youthful aspirations to liberal thought, he liked to consider himself as belonging. Beethoven believed his love was returned by the young Giulia, and went so far as to propose marriage. The girl's mother was quite inclined to accept, but the father declared that Beethoven was a man without rank, fortune, or permanent engagement, of peculiar character and temperament, and with incipient stages of an infirmity which would deprive him of the chance of any remunerative permanent engagement. So once more Beethoven was rejected, and this time he was sorely aware that the cause was his deafness. Yet the romantic side of this awkward man's character had inspired one of the piano pieces most loved to this very day, the Moonlight Sonata. Thank you. I have just mentioned the Brunswick family, and again, some time later, a young woman, the object of Beethoven's heart's desire, is a member of this very family, Josephine von Brunswick. Towards the end of the 18th century, Josephine had been brought to Vienna, together with her sister Therese, by their mother, who intended introducing them to the high society there. The young women took piano lessons from none other than Beethoven, who, much though he did not enjoy teaching, took this assignment with enthusiasm. Just think about it. Beethoven is around 30 years old. The young women sit beside him at the piano, their diaphanous complexion transpiring through the light fabric of their à la grecque dresses. Their arms are bare, and their necklines are rather low and revealing. Their pretty curly locks are loosely held by ribbons. The still empire of the years between the 18th and the 19th centuries had done away with the stiff corsets of the Baroque, and had not yet adopted the ridiculous crinolines of the Victorian age. Beethoven falls in love with Josephine, the younger of the two sisters. But before he has the time to make himself known, her mother marries her off into what will be a disastrous marriage. However, by 1804 she is the widow dame, and would therefore be free to start a lasting relationship. There starts, in fact, a string of letters that last until 1807. Beethoven declares his love, addressing her as O beloved J. In his passionate writing, we forget the gruff, leonine-looking, moody man and discover a tender romantic who writes, O beloved J, it is no desire for the opposite sex that draws me to you. No, it is just your whole self, with all your individual qualities. You have conquered me. Long, long, long lasting may our love become, for it is so noble. You made me hope that your heart will long beat for me. Mine can only cease to beat for you when it no longer beats, beloved J. After a long exchange of letters, Josephine finally declines any form of physical relationship, any form of sensual love. Beethoven is shattered, but he is taken up with his work, and once more, life. What has happened to the opera Leonore in the meantime? Over and again, its premiere was postponed, and when finally it was premiered on 20th November 1805, it was to a handful of Beethoven's friends and an empty house. Napoleon had overrun Vienna and set himself up at the Schönbrunn. The French military had closed up the gates of the city, so people could not reach the Theater an der Wien, while those who lived outside the city walls were afraid to venture out at night with the French military on patrol. This was Beethoven's first fiasco, and although it could be blamed on the political military situation, in fact on the presence of the French in the capital of the Habsburg Empire, it was also much criticized by the specialized press. The Allgemeine Musikalische Zeitung wrote, "Judged dispassionately and with an open mind, the whole piece is marked neither by invention nor execution." Thus, Beethoven's one and only opera had a difficult beginning and was to have a slow development. The master was convinced by his friend and patron Prince Lichnowsky to attend a meeting together with all the singers to see what improvements could be carried out. Princess Lichnowsky, an excellent pianist and a great admirer of Beethoven, patiently sat at the piano while the composer kept insisting, "Not a note will I change." But his friend Stefan von Breuning, with whom he was reconciled after they had fallen out over accommodation which they once shared, revived the script, shortening the three acts to two for a shorter, lighter version. Still, it was not until 8 years later that the opera, a third version rehashed and now named Fidelio, as we know it today, could finally see the light.
Leonore and Fidelio. Subtle changes or huge differences? Fidelio, or Conjugal Love, is freely adapted from the French by Joseph Sonnleithner. The opera actually exists in three different arrangements with four overtures. Work on the opera was started towards the end of 1803, but most of it was done in 1804 and 1805. At its first performance on the 20th of November 1805, not all the musical items were played in their original version. The plot of Leonore is roughly the same as that of Fidelio. Some of the most recognizable differences are in the start of the opera, with Marceline's aria, "Now, sweetheart, at last we're alone," coming first. Other changes are in the second act, where Leonora begins her aria, "Ah, break not yet exhausted heart," in E minor. Beethoven also restructures the aria fundamentally, with the E major entry appearing distinctly invigorating. The finale starts with the prisoner's chorus, and at first the action is the same in all three versions. But while in Leonore, Rocco incurs Pizarro's wrath solely because he is slow to carry out orders, in Fidelio, Rocco allows the prisoners out of their cells on his own authority. In the 1805 version, a soldier's chorus follows this aria, which was rather weak musically. Be that it may, it is no cause for regret that in Fidelio this number was replaced by the moving Prisoner's Chorus.
Let us fast forward in history and see how this came by. Napoleon has suffered the disastrous Russian defeat. He has lost Spain, and his troops have been defeated in 1813 at Vittoria by Arthur Wellesley, later Duke of Wellington. Napoleon is exiled at Elba, and the victorious Allies meet at Congress in Vienna to redraw the post-Napoleonic map of Europe. Theatre directors invite Beethoven to revive his opera Leonore, and he accepts on condition that the libretto be revised by the librettist Georg Friedrich Trischke. Notwithstanding his ill health, his family tribulations and depression, Beethoven embraces the task enthusiastically. In great pomp, the European heads of state are attending the Congress of Vienna. The organizers stage Fidelio for the gala evening. For the conclusion of this episode, Gerald Fennec suggests that it would delight listeners to listen to the recording of a legendary live performance of the finale of Fidelio, recorded at the Royal Opera House, Covent Garden, in February 1961. The finale features Sina Juninak, John Vickers, and the Covent Garden Opera Chorus and Orchestra under the baton of Otto Klemperer. Beethoven, His Life and Times continues next Tuesday at 8 p.m. with a repetition on Wednesday at 10 a.m.